Welcome to the Spirit Collective with Ofer and Johnny here in this beautiful Friday afternoon in sunny California for once, even though we have these cotton ball clouds that make me so happy, and we have a breeze, and we have a possibility of rain, which I hope turns into snow in the mountains, because that would be much more significant.
Hi, Johnny. Always fun to hear your voice.
Yes. How are you today?
I am doing really good, and I'm loving that it is Friday and it is kind of afternoon, Friday afternoon. It's one of my favorite time of the week, I think.
Absolutely. Nothing can beat it. Nothing can replace it, right?
Yeah.
And it's the time of day where everybody says, you know, if I had my druthers, I would be not working. And it's, you know what? We're not working.
No.
No.
Even when we're working, we're not working.
Exactly. So today, audience, I would love to do a little deep dive into what some people would call like kind of shadow work. And Ofer is phenomenal at talking about the shadows that can plague our heart. And shadow work, what this might look like. We have some examples of very specific examples to help expand on this. And then the other aspect is, so if shadow is present, you know, and what, how do we identify, and how, you know, what is within us, what is without us? And this is something that I love in terms of a term. It's called sourcing, you know, and so we'll dive a little bit on like, what does that mean exactly? Practical applications of sourcing, and then energetic applications of sourcing, and different ways that you might find yourself doing it. So with that being said, I was chatting with Ofer and asking him, has he ever himself had the experience with witnessing a siren? And so, of course, what was your reply, Ofer?
I honestly don't remember, but if you ask me now, I'd say I've read about it in books, and and I don't think I experienced it in any shape in my own life.
Okay, so that's cool. I've read about it in books as well. So some people would kind of categorize this under a fictional type character or a mythical type character. I say some people because the realms that I wander around would include these kinds of characters kind of naturally, just as natural as you and me as human beings. And so I'll just share with you like my interaction with a siren, and then what kind of, as I chose to just kind of sit with the information, and then as I was contemplating it or sourcing it, my mind wandered around to, you know, for some interesting reason, I also get a connection to vampirism. Hmm. So, which is another frightening, shadowy word, right?
Yeah, it has definitely its shadow that goes with it.
Yes. And so, so a siren is a term that has been used to describe a particular type of creature, which I think is a morphing together, perhaps, of maybe what most people would identify as a mermaid. I think I could be wrong. It's possible that a siren might fall under a type of nymph, right? Like whether it's a water nymph or a tree nymph or, you know, a forest nymph, obviously that would be trees.
Oh, so, you know, when my son was younger, much younger, we used to see the Little Mermaid. And so maybe that's kind of how I got what's the conventional expectation of how mermaid is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the singing, but there was no luring. I don't think there was luring of ships into trouble with in that movie. But that's kind of the conventional storytelling that I'm familiar with, that you'll hear this beautiful right? Otherworldly singing voice, and it attracts you usually into some trouble.
Sure.
Into a calamity.
Into right where you are, where you become susceptible to harm ultimately, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's beautiful because even in thinking about the movie, it's like, oh, so when you brought up the singing, you know, I'm sure everybody was immediately transported to, oh, I remember exactly how that felt to listen to. And that's when it comes to the idea of a siren and it, perhaps the vampire kind of concept shadow, the shadow of that mermaid, because in that show, yeah, it definitely was the mermaid song. And then we're talking about the shadow aspect of the mermaid song, which is essentially an application of powers or forces in order to have some authority or control over a situation or a person. So what does this look like when it's a real life person versus meaning a human versus the fairy kingdom in interacting with the human kingdom? So just what came across to me was, so I was working with somebody was chatting with me, and they were expressing a desire to co-work together, I guess you could say it. And so what I thought was real interesting was I checked in. Okay, you know, sounds fun. I think I'd like to do that. And so, but at the same time, I wasn't inclined to make the firm intersection. You know, I didn't immediately like say, let's do this and get it down on writing, right? And so I was just kind of sourcing it out. I was tuning in to how I felt and what it was that I was feeling. And so that's when I realized, I was like, oh, check this out. This is somewhat of a siren song. This is fascinating to me in that, you know, what compels somebody to activate a siren song? In right? Like, what do you think about
the word that comes to mind is luring.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. It,
there is something that you really want to explore that attracts your attention, that you want to see what's going on, what is this about, where is it? And there is also a sense of a trap. It's not innocent, is it?
Exactly. And so what I started thinking about within me was, okay, where is it possible that I've activated a siren song? And then I think about like what was going on with me at that time. So this is a type of sourcing where you're paying attention to some external sources. And then at the same time, it gives you an opportunity to internalize and pay attention to some of your own sources. And this is important because we gather data or information or energy from so many different places. And as we each endeavor to show up in the world in our authentic self and invite others to experience their authentic self, one of the biggest things is individuating and becoming self in order ultimately so that you know that when you make the choice to be with others, that you are represented. And it's kind of a conundrum, right? Because we are on the journey of self-discovery, and in the end, or on the path, whichever way, you know, we return back to self, other, and other self, and that whole concept of I am you, you are me, spiritually anyway. You can tell I kind of stumble over trying to explain this, and it because.
So let me ask you, when you experienced what you call the siren song, were you able to see whether it was internal or external?
Okay, so this
if there is even a meaning
to that. Yes, exactly, right? Is it something that you could differentiate? So when I reflected within myself to say, you know, however, if I will have to tell you that if I've employed this modality to interact with another being, I would have to say that what I was really working through would be a sense of self-control, or a sense of desire for what someone else might have that I would like for myself. So the question is, you know, have I ever done it? Well, I can, as I source through, I can say probably, but not consciously. And then now on, in having done many, many years of self-analysis or self, introspection, I can be very loving and very kind to myself, of being able to reflect and go, oh, so that's what you were up to. You know, this is why I brought up the idea that, where does this awaken in somebody, this desire to have authority or control? So in a siren song, for example, as you allow yourself to just imagine this beautiful creature, and as they emit their song, you are bathed in these harmonies, and you're relaxing, and you're feeling good, and you don't want this to ever end. And so then next thing you know, you're not conscious of your behavior, and who knows what's going to happen next, right?
You know, now that you're describing it this way, it transforms a little bit from the scary siren song to almost like the gift of the siren song.
Exactly. So the question is, what's the attractor factor? Like, am I emitting some sort of siren song, and then another person comes along and they're like, they're also emitting, you know, like a harmonics in that same manner? And if so, what is it that they're seeking from you or with you? I suppose just to kind of look at that co-creational energy, right?
Yeah, you know that whether it's manifesting through a siren song or through other means of communication, there is always a give and take. Not always conscious, but there's always some give and take, and even again, conscious or unconscious agendas.
Yes.
Right. Why would you want to communicate with this person? So there's always something. There's always something at the bottom of it, and it can be very innocent. I mean, there's nothing. Of course, there's nothing wrong. It's not a judgment, and I don't even look at it in terms of good or bad or good or evil. It's just one of our tool sets.
Right.
Of survival in a 3D planet where you have to watch out, and in the end, nobody lives without eating somebody else.
Exactly, right? So as I'm envisioning this experience of from the traditions of the siren luring some unsuspecting human to their demise, right? And they get lulled into, ultimately they're getting lulled into their own desire.
Okay, so this is maybe a little bit of a, there are elements here, I'm thinking of a power play, you know, where your power increases as you get this control or hold on somebody else.
Exactly.
And I see this in clearings that I do with clients a lot, that people are, somebody gets a hold on somebody else. And it doesn't go away on its own. In fact, many times
it kind of feeds itself, right?
Yeah. And many times the person who's been under a hold either doesn't know it or believes they can't get under from under it.
And learns also like to use it, right?
Yeah, and sometimes they don't really want to change it because it's like the thing they don't like, but they know already. And so there is some comfort with knowing how it works or how it's malfunctions.
So,
This kind of relationship.
yeah, so what I'd like to, I feel that, you know, we can expand just a hair bit more on this as people let this kind of mull around in their own minds, to because ultimately what we're about is the alchemy of energy. So if a person is experiencing manufacturing this type of lure, and then say a person who has developed a strength in their singularity, in their individuality, and so they've learned to come into the world expressing from that versus responding to the environment. And then you have a person who has learned this mechanism of using the siren song in order to create a situation that they could potentially benefit from. So we have these two players. And so in other words, the one that has individuated and stands strong is not as susceptible, right? So what ends up happening is this is that beautiful state of love where we can witness the other, where in those shadow feelings, which are ultimately their sense of self finds them lacking. And
Yeah,
right?
it's an invitation in some way, the siren song,
Mm-hmm.
to recognize where boundaries are needed so
Right.
you don't get swallowed.
Yeah, and it's like, so can you so now that we kind of have a kind of a concept of, and mind you, audience, this doesn't have to be a female. This could very much be a male who operates using this mechanism. So how does this parallel with another type or word that we might use to describe this kind of behavior, which is a basically a shoring up or a way, it really does set down into control. And I'd love to chat a little bit about where that resides in the body. But before doing that, talking about a little bit of, so what is vampiring? What is vampiring? What is the traditions that we've heard throughout time? And then what is the energetic application of vampirism? So are you familiar with this presentation of persona?
Vampiric persona would have to be, we all know what vampires in the movies do.
Feed.
It is the only way. I mean, talking about survival by somebody else dying, it's really for some people seem to be the only way that they know or that they're comfortable with surviving is, and it's not just about people, it's also about all sorts of beings that just likes to feed. Some people likes to feed on negative emotions. There are many ways of doing this. But you can see the effects of vampirism when, like the person that was bitten by a vampire, you feel very drained when the exchange or the relationship exchange is over. You are drained. You're
You're
drained.
drained. And so this, I wanted to bring attention to this because it is a very real situation. And some people, this might be the first time they've been introduced to it as a source or an observation. And be able to, you know, it's highly possible that some folks weren't conscious of the dynamic going on.
You know, you're actually bringing up something to me, which is, I mean, I just remember conversations with people. I mean, and it doesn't happen a lot these days, but it used to happen a lot, that especially people that I would think it would be so much fun to talk to, so interesting, so much to learn from. And, you know, you have a conversation, and the more the conversation going, the more drained I feel. It's like I can't even open my eyes in the end, because there is, it feels like on the surface, like the other person is talking, and so bombarding you with information that you're not necessarily seeking or can even process in any helpful manner. But what happens in effect is not that you're drained with information, but that something is being sucked out of you. And
and
that is not how we usually think about these things, but that's right. How I see it now.
Yeah, that's actually very fascinating to think about. And again, I'm sitting here saying to myself, oh gosh, I have to take ownership that there's a possibility that I have done that. And then just reflecting through my innocence, really.
Not like, to me, though, I have to say.
But reflecting through my innocence behind the action, right? Which was, you know, on a fundamental level, on a foundational level, the desire to be witnessed or connected. And then I just want to also point out that you're chatting a little bit, you know, the concept, it's not just a person, but you can also witness this vampire behavior in a group. Mm-hmm. Meaning that there could be a collective siphoning that's taking place. Isn't that funny? So close to the word siren, but siphoning. So like if you have a bunch of people that get together and there's a collective energy that's created, truthfully, everybody would benefit from that collective energy, but sometimes people cultivate it by they may enter into an environment in which they build this type of energy intentionally or purposely. And if you're sourcing or you're aware of sources, then what you would recognize is that this, whether or not this person is conscious or unconscious in their action or behavior of creating an energetic vamping, the application of conscious or unconscious also can say if an individual is doing it consciously, then those are the ones that you as an individual who might be siphoned from, you're going to want to source this more carefully on your behalf because of what you said. All of a sudden I found myself incredibly drained. The other one, the unconscious.
Yeah, and you can know when that happens because it can be very physical. It's a physical feeling.
It is. And it's not that they're taking from you, or is it? It's also partly that you're not able to sustain your own energy.
It's interesting what you're saying. It's like a combination of if you just go into if you're basically sucked into a known pattern, you'll just let yourself sit there and get drained.
Exactly.
And if you become aware of what's going on, you are always welcome to break the pattern. And that's a skill.
Yes. And the basis of these skills are consciousness and sourcing, as we described, and giving yourself permission to be not only involved in the whatever the relationship is, but also to remain uninvolved, to remain an observer or a witness. Yeah. What is this bringing to me? Or, you know, how am I seeking to benefit from this? Oops, pardon me.
But, you know, because I don't know how much our audience, I don't know even how much might I know about sourcing and the different ways and types of sourcings. Should we talk a little bit more about sourcing and the types of sourcing that are available or that people experience? And because You know, for example, I'm thinking there are the abilities to source from other people, but there are non-people beings that you can source from, and they're not even there are multiple categories. They could be part of nature, they could be part of inside the earth, they could be in your body, they could be heavenly. I just like to see if you what you think about different ways of sourcing.
Right. And what, you know what, you said something earlier about this that I think needs to be highlighted again. And that is that there is absolutely no judgment, no blame or shame. There is no right or wrong per se. It is, though, we have to make a declaration, following certain principles and certain laws, right? We want to make a declaration around those because it's a simple application, which is do no harm. So just a short note on sort, right?
And that includes yourself as well.
Thank you. I was just going to say, so the bigger picture here is when we say do no harm, most people think of it as to another and forget that you can be also harming yourself with your actions. So sources, where do these all come from? Well, as a embodied soul, I'd have to touch on, some people label one of the sources karma. I have to touch on the concept of parallel life or past life, right? And then of course, I sit there in contemplation, staring up at the big blue sky, thinking, what about future life? Can we source from the future life as well? So that's one layer of sourcing, right? Which puts you smack dab in the center. Then we take it down another level and we go, well, who makes you you? And how much is you yourself and how much is that inherited? So now we're talking what DNA and genetics, right? And then we go to that next level. They talk about in biology where it's like, is this environmental? Is it nature versus nurture? So these are different ways to source as well. So even though it's magical and mysterious, and I love that aspect of it, the mysticism of sourcing, it's also incredibly practical and down to earth. And
so what you're saying, among many other things, is that sourcing can be from external sources, like angels, for example, but it can also be from inside of you. The voices inside of you, it could be, for example, an inner child talking.
Right.
It could be, of course, we all have conversations with our ego every day.
Right.
So it's not about multi personalities, but we have different kinds of selves inside of us that it's interesting to sometimes to see how many or how they're differing from one another, because these are patterns. When you start to decipher, well, this is a specific way of thinking or experiencing something, or internal conversation, you can start to know who you're talking to. Am I talking to the inner child from when I was 8 or when I was 16? Or is it a certain part of my heart that I'm talking about? So,
So you had said something earlier that I want to tie back to too. And you just touched on it again. And that was like, so when you're sourcing, I was saying, if a siren is employing her techniques or his techniques to lure you into a complacency. So the first thing that came up was this idea of that's a control. So I want to touch with you on this idea of like, well, where within our system, like you were talking about, you know, the inner child, like, so in this idea of the shadow heart, like, if somebody wants to establish control, then would it be normal on the spectrum to consider that this at some point in their lives they felt they had no control? And then where does that reside in terms of personal sourcing?
That's interesting. Control is also tied in, you know, where my mind jumps to is beliefs, because we have sets of beliefs about ourselves that in many cases are formed by different experiences of being under somebody's control.
Right.
Right. And then there is a belief that is associated with, you know, usually a negative feeling, like something bad will happen if I don't, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Self beliefs about self-worth, about worthiness, about lovability, these kind of things.
Yeah.
And how do these self-beliefs form?
And what mechanisms, right?
Right. I mean, if you just go far enough back into early childhood or even into other lifetimes, you find some form of control being exercised that is shaping these things.
Oh, and then let's, in order to invite the audience into a kind of expansion consciousness, so we could have it be as simple as a short period of time of developmental timing, right? In the individual's growth. And then, like you were saying, or, you know, it could be residual energy from a prior lifetime. Well, let's expand that even further and say, you know, step back a little bit so you can see even the bigger picture, like how one's whole lifetime or prior lifetime may have been concentrating on a very specific aspect of self. And so I'm just excited because I'm thinking about, wow, you know, when we said earlier about this idea of like, there's just zero judgment about this, okay? Because here's the big picture deal. And that is that every one of us has these facets of our persona. And at any given time, we're projecting that facet and or we're exploring it. And so in that playing with it, what are we really doing ultimately? The self-discovery. And then in the larger picture of that self-discovery, we're also contributing to a larger energy or a larger awareness around these things. So when I track it back to like my specific incident, I'm like, oh wow, the siren song is being employed here. And I'm witnessing, and guess what? I wasn't even conscious at the time when it was employed. And the way I only became conscious of the siren song when the individual didn't get what they wanted immediately. And so unbeknownst to me, my response triggered a control type observation of my behavior. And so that's why I'm saying, Ofer, I'm like, you know, how many times have I done this? Especially when you think about raising a child, in our responsibility to society, or the bigger picture is we want to raise this child to be able to navigate society, harm without harm, do no harm. Isn't this funny? And yet we might be implementing some mechanisms of control in which we've wrested it from the child under the guise of it for its best or for its good or whatever. And then inadvertently that collapses a part of their own self-authority or their own self-esteem or their own self-worth. And so then we go and repeat this over and over again because we learned the mechanism that it gets in some way we can get our own sense of self needs met if we re-employ this. So what I'm saying is that, so like the person, when I responded with like, oh, okay, yeah, I think I can collaborate. Yeah, that's going to be fun. And then because it wasn't instant and specific, it was, oh, the response that I got to that just kind of, oh, I guess that did look like me individuating. That's kind of interesting because I thought I was just co-creating. I don't know. It's like, what was that about?
So I'm curious about when you say the response was, so did you source that response and then mm-hmm. how did that work? Because you sourced a form of, you know, of something like a siren song or whatever. And then there is something else that you question and you get an answer.
Yeah. And then what did I do with that? Right.
Yeah. And so how do you, this is a question to just how you do this. How mm-hmm. do you differentiate between what is you, what is not you, what is coming from a quote unquote divine or good source versus a source that you want to be perhaps more, not that it's a problem, but you want to be more aware of, you know, maybe agendas.
Yeah. So check this out. So what you're sparking up in me first and foremost is each of us has free will. Okay. So if we work under the principle of having free will, and then we look at this as a point of a viewpoint of, wow, okay, I'm shifting my viewpoint on what just occurred in my conversation and my relationship with another. And as I step even further back from that to kind of get that aerial viewpoint, I say, oh, check this out. Oh, for this is actually a synchronicity, which is my word for the year. This is actually a synchronicity because what I'm being invited into observing is my response to the situation that I may not have responded that way in the past, based on my desire to be loved. I may not have responded that way. So because I have observed the need to be loved and figured out how to be the love that I need, I'm actually able to look at this through the eyes of love and source. So you said, what's the divine source? Love. And as I look at it through the eyes of love, I go, wow, you know what? High five. You're doing an ass kicking job of showing up as your authentic self and you're inspiring by doing that. And so that, you know, the work that you and I do, that's the intention, is to inspire others to show up in their own authenticity, even if it's vulnerable, even if it's like, yeah, I want what you got. Okay. So what are you going to do about that? What sources are you going to put together to create that for yourself?
True.
Right. But we don't all know those mechanisms. And I think that's how something like the siren song or the energy vamping, I think that's how that ends up being integrated into one's environment, is because not all of us know how to do that. It's a journey to understand how to do that. And may we be blessed in childhood to have a loving example. But the truth is this: if we all waited to be perfect, then we'd be waiting indefinitely.
True. Literally.
Literally.
Yeah, there is something about the different levels of the skills that I guess that you engage when you source. And maybe as a child, or as an inexperienced adult, because it really is, it's not even about the biological age.
Right.
But you know, life here makes us engage in very physical things, and we don't really dwell a lot about the subtle energies. Most people don't. Mm-hmm. Subtle energies and what I'll call the mystique part of life, right? The things that are beyond the ordinary. But we all, even if you're not interested in it, you taste it from time to time. So when you're not very experienced, it's usually done in just in a less sophisticated or a less organized way.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be, you know, these are just dry terms, so don't make of it more than it is. But the basic level of organizing all these communications with, or interactions with other voices or knowings or sources that come to you would be psychic. You start, right? I mean, it's psychic in that you have some gifts. You know, it might be hearing, it might be seeing, it might be knowing, it might be something else. Mm-hmm. But you have a way of getting something that is not obvious, that is not just in front of you. And you might get into a room and have a sense that something just happened here and there is nobody here. And that's the sense of ambience or something,
right?
But when it's sort of in less skilled form, it would be psychic. So you just get a lot of input perhaps, and you don't always know what to do with it, and you don't know
where how to navigate with it, right?
Yeah, it's a bunch of information that comes your way, and it could scare you if you don't know what to do with it. Or if you're a child and adults say, don't do that, right?
Exactly. And you know what? You're walking me down memory lane because when I was little, it's not like I introduced myself as, hi, I'm highly sensitive. And I pick up on nuances that apparently are invisible to or unspoken to. No, what I had instead was I would blurt something out that to me was so obvious because it was part of the environment. And then I was informed that we just don't talk about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that a perfect way for you to shut down your sourcing?
Right.
Right. And it's like,
even though you've done it just because you could, and it was like fun, it was
natural,
it was playful.
Yeah.
Now you got the idea that this is actually something wrong. And mm-hmm. so you won't do it again, for sure not.
Or you'll shame
brag
it, right?
about it or share about it.
Yeah.
But as you say, if there is the right nourishment and
acceptance of normal, it,
mm-hmm. then maybe the next stage would be that you start using your intuition. And so that's where you move from psychic to intuitive, when you start recognizing the patterns and the ways, and you use it to actually make something useful in your life for yourself or for others. For others is the ultimate growing up, if you will, right?
And you know, let's push in here. Okay, so recognize, please, that comes of it, that births from it. That isn't the way that's touted about others. Is it's not an obligation, it's not a duty, it is not a requirement. It's a byproduct of coming into this consciousness.
It is, and the recognition that you and others at some higher level is the same, is one.
Exactly. And so I just want to, my eye, you know, when I wander around listening, my eye can sometimes pull me in sourcing, see, visual. And I just happened to glance over and this was what my eyes landed on. It was just to help some people kind of identify some of these sources. And this, what's interesting about this is on the level of power or power levels. And ultimately, I think that we all seek to be, to have that amazing sensation of being powerful. But to just kind of give the audience a little, some kind of basic outlines is you would source information along the lines of victor, victim. And remember that these are polarities, and that in these polarities, this could be totally within yourself and have like nothing to do with anybody else. Meaning you could be playing this out with other people, but you could also be playing this out within yourself. And that's part of the sourcing too, right? So victor, victim, fear, love, ignorance, knowledge, holding. This one's interesting, holding, sending, when you think in terms of power, right? Innocence, guilt, like we were reflecting on childhood, like how an innocent child might blurt out a obvious truth, but is guilted into a state of, wow, that wasn't okay because of the way that the adults might've responded to that information being publicized. Of course, you guys can probably hear I'm talking about myself. Okay, but bad, good.
But you know, what this brings me, that you're talking about these polarities, right? Like Victor, is the way. So again, there is no judgment and there is no good or bad. There is just a question: where are you?
Where are you? Exactly.
Are you in the middle? Are you on this side? Are you on that side?
What are you exploring?
There's nothing exactly, but just also the awareness that when you are, wherever you are, let's say that you're on the side of the victim. Okay. You just shifted your attention there. And so you're sort of dwelling there and you bring up memories about all the stuff that created victimhood in life. And you remember very vividly all kinds of scenarios. Mm-hmm. And what there is like a law of nature of the universe, or of a universal law that is working then, that is magnetics.
Right.
And when you dwell in that kind of frequency, victim frequency, there is the magnetics, and the magnetics say, because we're speaking about sourcing, might invite sourcing that'll be different from the kind of sourcing that you would get when you were on the other end of the pole.
Exactly. The frequency.
Yeah. And so it's like an invitation. The magnetics is an invitation for other beings, inside or outside, that are vibrating on a similar frequency, and they're the ones invited to give you even more.
Right, where we were talking about, okay, this is where free will steps in. And where you activating your will, your individual will, is going to facilitate whether or not you participate.
Right.
And then that opens you up to choice. And then earlier you said something about, organizing. And so, of course, I went to the other end of the pole. I was like, chaos. You think about, so where a person who wants to have authority and control over their experience, how they might bring chaos, such as a beautiful, alluring song, a sensation,
chaos, look around us in the world.
Exactly. And so it's just, and what is the vampiric energy in the world? I mean, you bring it in. So I want to honor this because it's true. You know, we said, let's span out and take a look at this on a larger experience, a larger level. What's going on in the world, vamping wise, right?
I mean, I can tell you that when I engage in reading articles, listening to all the crazy stuff that is happening in some parts of the world, and some parts of the world are right around the corner. It's hard to move through the day in a balanced, grounded way, for example. And mm-hmm. so that's an example for how the magnetics of being in, as you say, the side of the chaos could work. It would create internal chaos. It yes. could disrupt your sleep pattern. It mm-hmm. could disrupt your mood. So from peaceful, you might move to agitated, for example. And where if you just, there is nothing opposite to do. It's more like, don't do that. Like, don't watch that news channel. And then and then suddenly things like that stop from happening because your natural tendency is to actually be somewhere in the middle, in a balanced mm-hmm. manner. And so mm-hmm. you're sort of regain your balance when you stop doing these things that throw you off. But that's how the magnetics work with sourcing. So opening the TV is sourcing.
Yes.
It's sourcing through electronics and information.
Yes. Okay. That's gorgeous, because now what I'll do is I'll shift the facet and explain, okay, so here we have the same exact scenario. And what could be going on is that we tune into this chaotic energy of dissonance in order to actually galvanize us into stating our truth, our authenticity, and or our conviction under this principle, right, of do no harm. Like, we could be looking at that and become so, so disgusted that we turn around and we emit more love into the world. We embrace people with an open-armed embrace, with our hearts wide open. Just to show people that, when you attend to yourself and your reasoning behind your insanity, it's like there might be a really good, not to be black and white, but there might be a really good purpose as long as you're conscious that that's what you're using it for. It's when you become unconscious and when you're wielding a certain type of power of disgust or anger or judgment, and then you're compartmentalizing folks from that perspective, that's when you are actually co-creating more chaos.
Yeah, so when you go into a shadow part of you that has maybe this siren song, it's luring you into something that that feels shadowy, like it's not something you're especially proud of. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing wrong with that. It's what we do. And the question is, of choice, as you say, what do you do when you're there? What do you do when you're there? What do you decide? How do you decide to spend your time to experience your shadows?
Yeah.
Are you gonna shift? Or are you gonna perhaps decide it's time to clear? Are you gonna augment the shadow and make it even more shadowy?
Right.
So there is always a choice, and in many ways, not interacting at all or not being aware of your shadows is not a good thing. Because mm-hmm. just because you don't see them, it doesn't mean they're not influencing you. They actually do, and without even interruption, because mm-hmm. you're not there to even be aware of it.
And that's fantastic. That's a great way to close on this subject matter, because just to convey to others, it's like, so when we talk about something along the lines of the individual, but also being a participant in the unity consciousness, this is a beautiful way for us to embrace you in your fullness. It's not a condoning, right? If somebody's wielding in a way that is harmful to another or to themselves, but to embrace them with that love and affection of, hey, what is this about for you? And giving yourself permission to self-explore so that you do strengthen, you do prosper, you do ignite that creational energy to empower yourself into contributing to your life, like we were saying, the byproduct of that, when you show up that way, taking full ownership with love and affection toward yourself, when you show up that way, that your creator energy only expands.
Yeah, it takes courage, it takes openness, it takes vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that's the way to change. That's the way to become.
Yeah, that's the way to love without the conditions. Yeah, it's incredible. Thank you. Oh my goodness. Super interesting stuff, wouldn't you say? Thank you, audience.
And opening so many doors and windows for other conversations, right?
Yes, yes. And we hope you, audience, understand that that is our invitation. Absolutely. You know, what did this spark in you for you to introspect deeply on? You know, and maybe you do need some external viewpoints to help you with that, because who knows what's going on inside that head of yours as to, you know, where you are on the spectrum.
Yeah, and we would love to receive input from you as to what it is that you would like to hear from us.
Oh, that, and also we chatted a little bit last time about, like, if there anyone in the audience is listening to this and, you know, really lights something up for them and they'd like to come on and be our demo, you know, you're going to be going public. So Ofer was talking about, you know, the vulnerability of your heart space. Absolutely. And know that if you do decide to do that, we feel incredibly blessed to have the opportunity to be in service.
And everybody gets something great out of it.
Yes.
You, us, everybody else.
Exactly. Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you on another beautiful Friday.
And thank you. Have a great weekend.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.